recording studio with a poof in the middle of my living room.
A beanbag?
It's a poof, technically. Or as James Bond would call it, the villain of the movie. Welcome to Shaken and Stirred. It's a James Bond rewatch podcast for diehard 00s and franchise first timers alike. My name is 00 Evan Atkinson.
Yep.
And why did it take me that long?
I don't actually know.
Put that pun together. Good. And I am joined by my wonderful co-host, Alex.
Give me one.
Yeah. Alex 00-erty. Just the same pun twice. Alex, how are you?
I'm doing quite well. Excited to get a new boy.
It's a new boy. Gone is the 95-year-old walking, shuffling corpse of Roger
Watched
Moore.
Die on camera.
I mean, he was, weirdly enough, I feel like he was looking better in A View to a Kill than he was in Octopussy.
Yeah, at least he exited on a high note. They figured out editing better.
Roger Moore aged into his face.
Definitely.
Is how I would call it.
But he needed to go.
He needed to go. We're on to a new James Bond. Honestly, don't know the age of this fool as he starts, but it's Timothy Dalton.
Yeah, I don't know much about him.
I don't know much about him. I've seen him in other things. He was in Hot Fuzz.
Oh.
He's like, you've seen him around. He's got a very predominant cleft chin.
Okay, I'll recognize him.
He looks like a cartoon of himself, almost.
Interesting.
So we're watching The Living Daylights, which is one of my favorite Bond movie.
Oh, really?
Titles. Yeah. I've not seen this. I haven't seen it. Yeah, no, it really made you wait for it. I just think, like, I don't know. It's they're all really good, like, punchy kind of idioms or like sayings, like For Your Eyes Only, killer spy movie name. Live and Let Die, amazing.
Live and Let Die.
A View to a Kill, Licensed Kill, great, great. And then you start getting a little more obscure with like Tomorrow Never Dies, The World Is Not Enough.
Starts turning into like song titles.
It makes writing the theme song a lot easier, I guess.
Yeah, like it's like sort of going vice versa.
But it's, I don't know. I just like it. It's like, it scares the living daylights out of you. Like, what are the living daylights? We'll find out now.
Oh, that is a good one.
He was 41. Timothy Dalton was 41 in this. So
why don't they get a younger man?
I think like the character of James Bond in the books is like, he's younger and scrappier, I think. But not by much. He's like 40.
Like, Sean Connery is probably exactly right.
Yes.
Why wouldn't they continue doing that? Well, we'll see. We'll see. We'll
There's
see.
No more Sean Connerys. Okay. I don't know.
You can only get him.
This fool kind of looks like a Sean Connery. But yeah, he is the second shortest tenure of a Bond actor with only 2 movies.
They did not like the fella.
He was just, yeah. I don't know. I remember hearing that this was kind of like they're going for like a darker, grittier thing in the 80s. But I don't really know how that's going to turn out in such a campy franchise.
Yeah, maybe that's why people didn't like it, but maybe we'll like that more.
I don't know. It could be good. But Alex, I don't know anything about this movie. What do you think is going to happen?
I think in this film, we are going to be going to Brazil.
Yeah.
And I think we are also going to be going to Australia, lots of places with daylight.
Okay.
I think it's going to be something about sun rays, solar panels.
Oh, shit. And that
leading to, like, robots or something silly.
That feels very good.
Thank you.
The solar panel thing seems like a good pull. I feel like that's a very, like, 80s technology.
Right.
Like, oh, solar power is going to be evil.
I think they already did a different renewable energy movie, which might be why I'm thinking about it, but they really fuck around with water.
Isn't that like part of Quantum of Solace?
No, I feel like it was like one of the last ones we saw.
Maybe so. I think Living Daylights, God, yours was so, feels like honestly bulletproof. I'm going to say we're going to keep with the 80s ski movie shtick.
Hell yeah.
I think he's going to ski in this one. I remember a scene from one of the Timothy Dalton movies where he shoves a guy into the crankshaft of like a of a some kind of platform and just grinds them up in the gears.
Hell yeah.
And I
hope it's this one.
Think it's the giant radio telescope in Brazil. No, that might be GoldenEye. That's GoldenEye. Okay.
Spoiler.
I'm thinking
about that's not even Timothy Dalton.
All right. I don't need to be too legit with this. I think he's going to go to Hawaii.
Ooh.
And
he's skiing in Hawaii.
I think there's going to be a lot of England in this one.
I like that.
There's going to be a lot of home turf stuff.
Get him established.
And maybe Morocco.
Gotta stay warm.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what the daylight function is going to be, but I'll agree with you. I think solar panels are going to be a thing.
I can also see it being someone's name.
Oh, Stephen Daylight.
Yeah, Professor Daylight.
Professor Daylight.
The ballroom.
Oh, Professor Daylight, don't be so bright.
Ooh.
I think it's going to be very good, but we're gonna give it a shot. We're going to watch it, and we're going to come back a little bit more shaken, a little bit more stirred, and break down the movie. We're back. We just finished watching The Living Daylights.
Watched The Living Daylights out of that film.
We watched, I tell you what, that's true. It was our first Timothy Dalton. I guess let's get Timbo out of the way.
What are you trying to say?
I don't know. Nothing very effectively. Timothy Dalton as James Bond.
Yeah.
One movie down.
Yep.
What do you think?
Honestly, I thought he was great.
It was pretty good.
My mother told me before we watched this movie that at the time people hated him, but she liked him. And now I'm seeing exactly. Well,
what do you like about him?
I liked his seriousness to the role despite being still kind of like spunky.
Hmm.
I thought he was very believable as a spy.
Yeah.
That's really what it was. I'm going to be honest. He just didn't seem like some dude.
He is giving the most similar to Daniel Craig.
Yeah, definitely.
So far.
Definitely.
Like, he's just, when it's spy talk, he's like, so hardcore.
Yeah.
And like ready to
kill. Held a gun.
He held a gun convincingly.
Mm-hmm.
He held a gun that looked like it could do damage to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I did write down in my notes, this is the most effective James Bond we've ever seen.
Yeah. I said he can hold a gun.
There's no, like, every other James Bond has been a kind of fun, goofy guy stumbling his way into different scenarios,
mm-hmm.
getting caught in traps,
mm-hmm.
like just being kind of silly. This one
purposely going into traps.
Timothy Dalton at the drop of a hat is pulling a gun on somebody and is prepared to end their life.
He was setting up the traps, which I feel like is what you would assume from one of these movies. But no, this is one of the first times.
No, this is the first time I can confidently say that James Bond was a competent secret agent.
Literally, he was doing a lot of sneaking around.
We had the same Q. Q is back.
He's the only one consistent. Well,
yeah, very different Money Penny.
Really changed ideas.
Money Penny is 30 years younger and blonde and kind of bookish and sassy.
Literally, like they kept her in a very sheer top.
She just kind of like, she walked around the office and was like, come on, James, you're late for your meeting. Like,
it's a very 80s idea of a secretary.
She is, I feel like she would be played by Aubrey Plaza.
No. It'd be more, because Aubrey Plaza is a little serious.
Yeah.
This lady was a lot more kind of like spunk, like her, she'd be more like an Anna Kendrick.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Just kind of like, come on, James, you're late for your meeting. What are you doing?
Mm-hmm. Give him some shit, but still sexy.
Kind of, yeah. Which is very different than the like.
Aubrey Plaza and Chilia.
Well, yeah, but like the old Money Penny was effectively James Bond's wife. Like,
yeah,
she cared for him so much.
Yeah,
they were
she
both
was making
old.
Fun, but
like was... she was like, oh, James. This girl was like, kind of didn't care about him a little bit, which was a very interesting turn.
They were like kind of pals. Like
they were colleagues. They were coworkers.
But that talked about his sex life.
Yes. They were coworkers without an HR.
They were coworkers after you get drunk with them a couple of times.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like they went to at least two company parties and that's where they are.
They're tight.
Coworker. Yeah.
In their coworker journey.
Mm-hmm.
I liked Timothy Dalton.
I think he's
a good James Bond. I think he is. Every James Bond has brought something different. Timothy Dalton is bringing believability as a spy.
Definitely.
Everybody else has kind of just been like, Sean Connery is just pure charm.
Yeah.
Like, I will watch Sean Connery order breakfast. Like,
for sure, for sure.
And most of those movies were him being like, I'll have an omelet. Like, it's just that
just
kind of
just chatting about lifestyle.
It was great. I loved it. Then, you know, our other guy, George Lazenby.
He existed.
He existed. He was just a cardboard cutout of a man.
He did stunt.
He did stunt. Love it. Roger Moore, who we spent so much time with.
He was
face acting a lot.
Yeah.
Roger Moore just seemed kind of, he would get dropped into situations and then kind of be like pleasantly surprised or startled he was there. Like, can you believe this guy Kananga has a shark? What's going on?
Like, almost kind of weird relatability kind of factor.
He was the audience surrogate.
Yeah.
Like, but none of those fools would I trust with national security.
Nope. Any secret.
I would put my life in Timothy Dalton's hands.
For sure.
100%.
He still, like, did the classic James Bondy things, but in a way where you were like, yeah, you probably could keep your job.
Yeah. He snuck him in when it felt most appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't like stopping a gunfight to be like, oh, silly goose. Like, at the end of this, he delivers one of his like four Bond lines. And when he, at the end, he drops the henchman out of the plane after a fight by cutting his shoe off his foot that the henchman was clinging to. And he walks back into the cockpit and the Bond girl says, what happened to the guy? And he says, oh, he got the boot. But he cuts himself off mid-sentence because they're about to crash. Like, he's got bigger fish to fry.
Literally.
Oh, he got the boot. Wow, what are you doing?
Like life happens.
Life happens.
Mm-hmm.
He can't say any of the quips, which I thought was good.
Definitely.
Let's talk about the plot of this movie.
Let's do that.
So there's like...
This one was easier.
Oh, okay. All right, explain. What happened?
Well, the gist of it, if you just want the TLDR.
I want just the gist.
There are a group of like 00s that are dying. James is trying to figure out why. They know they try to get this like sleep, like this guy that was in the KGB out of Russia. And this guy says, it's this guy that you know that's killing everyone. He's like, that's weird, but okay. Goes to kill him.
Okay, you said this guy for it. So there's a KGB defector named Georgi Koskov.
Yep, yep, yep.
James Bond gets him out of Russia. Georgi says, hey, it's General Pushkin, this guy that James is pretty familiar with. General Pushkin is trying to have all these spies assassinated to start to heat up the Cold War, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Continue.
Well, yes. And at the same time, he does meet a cellist.
Oh, very important.
When they're trying to get out Georgie guy, a cellist who was on stage leaves the stage because this all happens at a theater. She grabs a gun, tries to shoot the guy escaping, and James Bond decides to not shoot her. But anyways, we get a Georgie out of there. We're trying to go after Pushkin. And yeah, it's like a whole tale of him thinking he needs, or James Bond thinking he needs to go after this one dude to avenge all these guys that keep dying around him. Turns out Georgie's the bad guy, and he works with this scary American guy who loves guns and ends up dealing in opium.
Okay, so here's where it got complicated for me. I think the plot, it's a triple cross that it makes sense at the end of the movie when you're like, oh, okay, I know who all the players are in this. But the movie doesn't let you in on that secret. It kind of like lets us know only what James Bond knows. So he is like trying to assassinate the wrong person a lot of the time. And basically the main plot, as far as I understood it, was to broker an arms deal between Russia and this guy, Whitaker, who's an American arms dealer. Use the deposit from that arms deal to go and buy diamonds.
Already insane.
Crazy. Take those diamonds in an organ transplant case hidden as ice around a dog heart.
Yeah.
And trade the diamonds for raw opium in Afghanistan.
Naturally.
Sell the opium and make a bunch of money and then make the rest of the money from the arms deal.
That sounds like a plan.
That's like six steps
Too long.
Like, I think they were like, oh, no, no, no. This is Timothy Dalton. We can do a real thinker now. We can do an actual, like, espionage plot and not be like, he's got a laser to blow up the moon.
Yeah, they're like, this is how real drug dealing happens.
Yeah, this is just straight up. There's no international, like, conspiracy. There's no world domination. This guy's trying to self heroin.
Yep. And then every 007 or 00 agent around him or just dies all the time.
Yeah,
he's always in a room and then just a dude's dead.
002?
Four. There's another six, one that eight. We didn't know.
Who else do we appreciate? They all got by the villain's henchman, Koskov's henchman, Necros, which is such a spooky name
right. For
a silly looking guy.
Also sounds oddly Greek.
Yeah, it does sound Greek. But they set Necros up to be like this scary, he's kind of skeletal looking a little bit. And I almost thought they were going to do a Jaws with him of like, he's a silent assassin. He's just a, like, just straight up like a monster.
Yeah.
But they just have him talk and he's just like a
normal.
He's a guy. They like have a scene of like him and Koskov hanging out by the pool and he's just swimming laps. And he gets out in his little speedo. He's like, ugh, what's the boss want us to do now?
Literally.
Koskov's like, come on, silly goose. Let's go find out. We've
just seen him do like three murders with a headphone set.
Yeah. He just puts on rock music in his head and then just assassinates people.
Like, okay.
But they kind of undermined his scare factor with that. But I don't know. Any like big highlights from this? Any big lowlights?
I would say highlights for sure would be what I imagine is going to be a highlight for you. Vehicles, top notch.
Oh my God.
In this here film. We got great gadget.
A lot of really good gadgets, which I thought like this one felt like it was going to be more intense and grounded.
Definitely.
But the gadgets were crazy.
We still had a great Q scene of them kind of fucking about, like holding a stereo that ended up having a rocket in it. Having rockets come out of his car.
Having lasers come out of his car. Here's all the things that are in his car.
We both have a list of things that come out of his car.
Okay. First of all, the sickest Bond car ever. It's like an Aston Martin DB something.
Not a clue.
It looks like if Aston Martin made a Mustang. It is. Okay. It has a laser in the hubcap that he uses to cut the bottom off of a police car, which is crazy.
They just fully go off of the wheels. It's incredible.
He has rockets that come out of the front.
Mm-hmm.
He has skis that come out of the side when they go on the snow. Yep.
Wheels had little nails that came out when the skis came out.
Yes, for traction. He loses a tire at one point and then uses the hubcap to cut a hole in the ice.
Yeah,
and sink another car.
Yep.
And then at the end, he has to jump a bridge and a rocket booster comes out of the back of the car. It's also bulletproof.
As it must.
So delicious.
So good.
So good.
There's nothing better.
All the while.
And then, there's a self-destruct button. So he does. And that's a weapon in the end.
That was a huge highlight. He and Kara, who's our Bond girl, the cellist.
Mm-hmm.
It's those two and her favorite cello.
The rose.
That she insists that he gets. And then they do a highlight car chase, low light cello sliding. Honestly, highlight that.
Yeah, that was kind of.
They used the cello as a sled.
And that cello would have been fucked up.
Or the cello case.
Well,
they used the cello as a rudder.
Yeah. And also a bit like a shield at one point until she got pissed.
They go across the border of Austria on this ski chase in the cello case. And he gives his passport to her. He says, wave this. And then they go under like the gate for the cars. And he throws the cello over the gate and catches it on the other side and goes, nothing to declare. And she goes, except for the cello.
Just a cello. That's sick. Welcome to Austria.
I love that.
They traveled a bunch.
We did Afghanistan, Tangier, Austria, Czechoslovakia, probably Russia, somewhere in there. I guess Czechoslovakia was Russia.
Yeah, I thought there was one right before we went to Tangier. Maybe not.
What do you think about our Bond girl?
You know, she was endearing. I thought she was she was a slow burn for me, for sure. At first, her kind of role was being like young, innocent. He wasn't going to sleep with her. She kind of had another thing going on.
She was dating Koskov.
Mm-hmm. And but the way she talked about him was like kind of like a kid talks about a dad where like, I don't understand this benefactor relationship. But no, it ended up working out quite well. I thought she was, you know, capable, loved the whole arc. Idea, him being so obsessed with really anything she does and asks for, no matter what. So that's pretty cool.
He's a patron of the art.
He just loves a good orchestra performance. How about you?
Yeah, I thought she was pretty good.
You liked her.
I thought she was very pretty. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. She was like, I feel like everyone in this movie just kind of got it.
Mm-hmm.
They all kind of knew what they were doing. Everybody, no one was giving these really silly performances. Mm-hmm. No one was going over serious in a silly movie. Everyone was just kind of like hit the tone perfectly, I feel like.
Yep, definitely.
I liked her. The craziest performance was Koskov, but I think he was meant to be like just this scene chewing, like Lando Calrissian kind of guy.
Yeah.
Just like very over the top, a little silly.
Had all these ladies.
He stuck his tongue out at one point. I thought that was adorable. He was like, you got to go meet with the boss. He's like, okay. And
right after he got two separate women.
I mean.
Incredible.
I thought it was fascinating. I thought it was good. I think the low light is this movie. I don't know how long this movie was. It felt like it was 4 hours.
It was really, because the thing is, I kept thinking to myself, out of all the other Bond movies, this has technically the easiest plot. There aren't really things blowing up.
Yeah.
Or there are, but I just felt like there was less science. Like, it just felt like it was more like a chase movie, but it still felt like I was lost. And I don't know how it did that.
Yeah. No, I get that. It was like, it's weird because I think back about it now. Maybe we're so, I guess, like, it's whiplash coming off of A View to a Kill. Cause I'm like, at one point he drives a car into a boathouse and then drives the boathouse around and throws a lake.
He does drive
a boathouse. He like, they're blowing up like airfields and flying cargo planes and befriending the Mujahideen. And then like,
oh yeah, we didn't even mention that.
They go to Afghanistan. They're in jail at one point. Like all that stuff happened, like crazy shit happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still like, none of it will compare to the fishing line butterfly assassination that Grace Jones does in the movie immediately preceding this.
Yeah.
Like, this is such a different universe.
We have a whole fight on a hovercraft, you know? I don't know.
In the, like, the last movie, there's the boring, like, L.A. judicial records geology
thing. Yeah.
But they did have a blimp fight on the Golden Gate Bridge. Like, there was crazy nonsense happening.
That is true.
This story felt a lot smaller. Like, it felt more self-contained.
Yeah, it was really, they were going to different countries and stuff and meeting with other, and it was very intelligence-focused.
Yes.
Other than the kind of weird location exoticism that they have to do.
Like, if something went bad in this movie, it was only going to affect, like, 100 people.
Mm-hmm.
In the last movie, they tried to sink California.
Yeah, no, they were going to fully get rid of an area so they could have a monopoly of a chip. Like.
So it's, yeah, I guess it was the most, like, it was focused. It was just a spy movie.
But they did get a lot kind of, I will say a highlight is the vague feeling of it being a detective movie as well as a spy movie. Like, we had pretty weird murders happening like right next to Bond, and he wasn't understanding like what he was missing, and they were pretty gruesome. It was kind of fun.
It was intense. I think a low light I did have was,
wow, you had a lot of notes on this one.
I took a lot of notes. It was one, I don't know how to spell Czechoslovakia at all. Chico Slovakia. My low light was, there's a phrase that they keep seeing, essentially the calling card that Necros leaves at all the murders to try to make them think it's going to be this like this spy war that they're trying to plot. Impossible to pronounce.
What are they saying?
It's Russian for like spy war, I think. It's like Smyretsmienemun, something. It's just two S words, but it looks like Smarty Spumoni. Like, it's just random things. So every time I saw it, I'm like, what is this? And also, right? It's not a very, like, menacing word.
No.
He kept seeing, like, silly strings, spandex.
It was on a balloon.
I wanted to be like, yeah, it was on a balloon. It's on a balloon and a little license tag. But like, every time they said it, I thought it sounded silly. I want, like, in the Bourne franchise, like Black Briar, like something that sounds spooky.
Honestly. And like, I know they have a trend of doing stupid shit like Octopussy, but at least give us like a sex name then.
That's true.
You know, like, I don't know.
Vag Assassination.
Fun. Yeah. I will. Oh, yeah. No, actually, go for it.
What will you say?
No, because the stuff that I feel like I'm going to bring up are about classic. Well, what I will say is,
let's talk about it.
No, but I will say his intro to the Bond franchise is him by some rocks and a monkey attacking him in the first 20 seconds.
He gets rocked by animals in this. Literally. Right at the end of the movie, he's sneaking into a compound and a bird flies into his face.
For no reason.
No reason. They do not address it. He does not react to it.
He jumps back and that's it.
It feels like an actual bird flew into his face during the take.
It was a blooper that they didn't like unbloop. I don't know.
Unbloop. That is the term. The theme song for this one is The Living Daylights by A-ha, which slapped, honestly.
Yeah, it was a vibe. I've been liking these very 80s.
Oh, yeah. It's just dark synth pop, like crazy.
Could be Law and Order.
It did feel Law and Order-y.
Very fun.
I thought it was good. If you were going to watch a movie of one character in this film or a spinoff franchise, who would it be?
Easy. It's going to have to be the guy that they rescued from jail that I'm forgetting the name of. Cameron. Cameron.
It's he says Cameron initially. He's like, Cameron. He's the leader of the Mujahideen. It's Kamran Shah.
Yeah, he was pretty hot. So I would get some content with him.
He was hot. He was cool. He rolls through with his gang of guys everywhere.
You called yourself B.
Well, I'm B for badass. My favorite character.
It's A and B.
My favorite character is the person who is acting the most in this movie. It's Koskov.
Yeah.
It's just like, he's a silly wild man.
Yeah.
And I love
all over the place.
He's just doing his fucking thing. And I think it's amazing.
Him and his bitches.
What's the biggest Bond moment? I feel like a very non-traditional Bond movie.
Yeah, but in some ways sets a lot of scenes. Well, here's some classics. It's all about his fucks for me. He has sex on a boat right away before the title sequence. He stops a whole Ferris wheel ride just so that he can have his first encounter with the Bond girl.
Timothy Dalton's so intense that read like a threat to me. He was like, they're on this very famous Ferris wheel in Austria, and it stops at the top, and she's like, oh no, it's broken. Are we under attack? And he goes,
because they have just been previously under attack.
Yeah, they've been being chased around the world by the KGB. And he goes, no, I arranged for this. Meanwhile, like, he's trying to meet a guy downstairs.
He's just waiting.
Can see is already there. And he's like, no, I paid a guy to stop the Ferris wheel at the top.
Gotta fuck.
And she's like, oh, no. And then I have a boyfriend.
Yep.
And then he kisses her. And at first I thought it was going to be another classic James Bond of, this is pretty questionable. She's like, I've been having dreams about you. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, she was like, nah, I've been trying to fuck you since I met you.
That's pretty good.
So that was unexpected.
This movie kind of ends with them having like a really cute relationship. This movie ends like the pacifier or something.
Yeah.
Like everything is so buttoned up.
Mission Impossible.
She has a great job as a cellist. All of his friends are there.
Everyone wins. Other than the guys that were on his side.
It feels like the Fast and Furious cookout at the end of every movie. Now definitely. They do a cookout.
Every time.
At the Toretto house. And it feels like that, like all the villains or all the people they met along the way are all there.
Gotta do a bunch of lens flare because there was that in this movie.
Some staggeringly good shots. And
also Felix.
Also Felix shows up. New Felix. He was present. He was fine.
Felix review. Not exciting.
No. The Felix review. 5 out of 10.
Yeah, Felix review, his backup characters are better than him.
Yes, damn, true. I don't know what the most Bond moment was for me, to be honest. The gadgets, I guess the gadget sequence was pretty killer.
The whistling stun.
He got the boot is good when he kicks Necros out the plane.
Definitely.
No, it's the least James Bond in a way because he's an effective spy.
Yeah, that's true. I would say his car taking the whole house, the whole house that you mentioned earlier, the cabin.
Yes.
That was pretty Bond. It was pretty Bondy.
That was pretty James Bond. One interesting thing about this movie, which I was reading through my notes and saw Milk Bomb, and it reminded me of this thought. There's a good number of scenes in this movie that play out entirely without James Bond ever being in them. Like when Necros does the milk attack.
Yeah.
James Bond has already left. He drives away from the mansion and then Necros attacks. And there's like a full-on fight scene with some other agent in Necros.
It's like every time people were interesting.
I don't know. There's normally not this much stuff happening without James Bond.
But the only way that people could be dying because it was so powerful.
But I guess the cold open with 008 dressed as the clown and the knife throwers chasing him from, yeah. See, that's what's crazy. This is just a real movie. Like, we're
like the fact that there's one movie where he dropped a man down a chimney and then the whole man.
No, I'll buy you a delicatessen. Dude, what the fuck? Like, these are. I feel like the more now that we're into like actual movies, I feel like Roger Moore movies were all a fever dream.
Literally.
I don't know what was going on, except for Live and Let Die. Live and Let Die has a zombie man that comes up from graves. I don't know.
Like, what is this franchise?
It evolves.
It evolves.
What would you rate this out of 10? I'm honestly confused on what to write this.
What if I called any other movie?
I mean, we need to relitigate all these. But like, I think this movie was like,
Give it a 7.
Okay.
What are we gonna say?
No, that seems fair to me. Cause like, I liked it. I love everything that's going on. It just kind of like, it was kind of boring at parts. And I was like, didn't care, but I was like fascinated by, I was very swept up in all the choices.
Yes. It was like the title sequence was fun. A lot of the classic things we were loving it so hard for a time and then dropped for a bit. But what movie haven't we said that in?
That's the thing. Like I gave A View to a Kill 7.5. I think entirely because of the raw sex appeal of Christopher Walken.
Dude, he was fucking sexy.
How weird he is and how like just crazy some of the stuff is.
What were we giving 8.5s?
8.5 is Live and Let Die. I love that movie. I stand by that one 100%.
What did I give an 8.5?
You gave an 8.5 to
The Spy Who Loved Me.
Or is it Moonraker?
No, it's The Spy Who Loved Me.
Yeah,
it's
The Spy Who Loved Me. All right. I'm gonna give this one a 7 as well. I agree with you. I think it's like it's a pretty good flick.
Yeah. Wow, we've been spot on these past couple.
I think, you know what, mate? I should bump this. I got to make this 7.5.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You like it as much as the last one, A View to Kill.
I think I need to like re-rate these as in like I would rate them higher if I would re-watch them. Like the ones I gave 8 to are Thunderball and Goldfinger. Hell yeah, I'd watch those right now.
Dr. No still holds up for me.
I guess we just got to watch them all over again. Any final thoughts on The Living Daylights?
I'll say that I don't really understand what the movie title came from, but I liked it.
He said it when
why is that?
He shot the gun instead of killing Kara in the beginning, the cellist, and he said, I must have scared the living daylights out of her.
But like, why would that be? Why would it be the name of the movie?
She
is it because everyone's getting scared?
Tide beats me.
Well, overall, good.
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, hey, we watched The Living Daylights out of it.
I already said that.
I know. I said it again. And last up next is our second and final Timothy Dalton movie.
They do him dirty. That's what I'll end it with. They do him dirty.
They do him
dirty. Thought he was a good James Bond.
Well, we'll see what happens in License to Kill. Maybe he really fucks it. But
maybe he does.
Next up, 1989's License to Kill. And then we're on to one of the most famous of all time, GoldenEye. After a 6-year break, Pierce Brosnan shows up in 95.
Oh my God, and then we get Craig.
Shit,
that's crazy.
It's
it's big time.
Might finish it in the year of 2022. No.
I think we got a good chance. The winter will be long.
The winter will be long.
Bye.
Bye.